What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
Oi, oi, guess who's back? Me. Good morning and welcome back to my show, What the Health with Gabby Allen. Thanks for joining me today. You're definitely in the right place. On this fabulous show, we dive into the never-ending, weird and wonderful world of health and fitness. And every week, I have the pleasure of chatting to some incredibly smart, talented and interesting people to talk about all things health, wellness and fitness. There are so many things what my nana would call fibs out there. So we spend a lot of time picking them apart, the fibs, the myths, the hearsay, learning from professionals in that field with what is actually what. So, as The Apprentice might say, guys, did you know that I was on The Apprentice as a fitness expert? Lol. How mad is that? But yeah, I kind of do know some stuff. So, send me in your questions, because at the end of every week, at the end of every week of every show, we do some fitness questions where I answer all of your stuff. And if I know the answer to it, I will answer it. If I don't, then I won't. Simple as. So what do we have coming up on today's show then? We are joined by Sam McCarthy, fitness content creator, where we'll discuss body confidence and steroid use. And Susanna Daniels talking about the damage of sun exposure and sunbeds. But first up, we have the beautiful, the wonderful Dr. Clarissa Lenher, gut health and IBS nutritionist. Hello, my love. How are you?
Hello. Glad to be here. Really excited.
Thanks so much for coming on. You look wonderful. So first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Clarissa, thanks for the introduction. I am a BAMP registered nutritionist. I run my own private practice where I help people on a one-to-one basis, in person on Harley Street in London, digitally as well. And I specialise in IBS, and I know we're going to really get into kind of digestive health and things like that.
Yeah.
But I have such a passion for helping people with chronic digestive issues. I spent many, many years chronically bloated and it messed me up completely. So I have a huge empathy and then went to train so that I could help other people in kind of similar shoes.
So that's what's inspired you to do it?
100%. Oh, yeah, it was awful. And I'm sure so many people, especially women, are suffering. I know they are because I see them in my practice all the time. So I'm a nutritionist. I run my practice. I also run an online program called My IBS Solution, which has been designed specifically to help all those people with IBS. And I'm a corporate wellness speaker. I've worked with over 200 companies globally. Facebook, Amazon, eBay, talking about all different areas of health, mental health, physical health, stress resilience. But really my kind of absolute passion
is first love,
is all things gut health.
So first of all, question, is IBS more prominent in women than men?
Yeah, so statistically, we do tend to see it more in women than men. It might be down to partially genetics. There's also menstrual cycles that can kind of definitely...
Those damn things.
Yeah, exactly. Can make things more sensitive. It's said that women can feel themselves more. You know, we're more in tune with our bodies. We notice different kind of changes.
Yeah, men kind of just go, oh, I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. I'll be fine. Whereas we're like, no, I can feel something twinged on my left-hand side.
Yeah. And you know, physically, women, on average, obviously I'm talking about stereotypes, but tend to look at their bodies a little bit more, be a little bit more judgmental, look at abdominal bloating and, you know, think about how does that physically look in the mirror.
Fair.
So yeah, we do see it more in women.
So can you talk us through what IBS actually is?
Yeah. So I think lots of people don't really understand it. That's because it's kind of poorly understood by even medical professionals. But IBS is a chronic digestive condition. It's really, really common. And there's no specific test. And I think that's where the confusion comes in, is that you can't just get a blood test and go, yes, I have IBS. You're kind of looking at IBS by ruling out a lot of symptoms, asking a lot of questions. You might get some tests done to rule out inflammatory bowel disease or celiac disease, these kind of really kind of chronic diseases. And then you're often just given a diagnosis. And the symptoms of IBS are really far reaching. So the common ones can be changes in bowel movements. I know not a lot of people like getting this up close and personal, but honestly, you know, changes in regularity. So do you have constipation, diarrhea, a bit of a mix of both? Do you get bloating, which is definitely the most common symptom I see in my practice? And a little bit of flatulence or gas alongside that, and pain. So kind of cramping or sensitivity in the gut. Those are the common symptoms, but there are actually many, many far-reaching ones as well, including mucus and all kinds of nasty things we won't talk about today. You really got to start looking at the toilet. So those are some of the symptoms. And the causes, again, poorly misunderstood. So the common ones we see are changes in visceral hypersensitivity, you know, kind of complex sounding way, but essentially what that means is the nerve endings in our gut being more sensitive. So we feel more pain, or we notice more kind of cramping or things like that. Post-infectious IBS, so if you've got food poisoning or gastroenteritis.
That can cause it.
Yeah, so it can cause long-term changes in the gut. Dysbiosis, which is thrown around a lot, but essentially what that means is an imbalance of the friendly bacteria and not so friendly bacteria in the gut.
Yeah, we spoke to somebody a couple of weeks ago about your gut microbiome after taking like too many antibiotics, yeah, and things 100%. Like that can actually make a long-term difference, can't they, as well? So question, does everybody have a kind of little bit in there? You know, because we all have our moments, don't we? Maybe that's just for food intolerance or something that might have not been cooked quite well. But does everybody, I feel like everybody has some sort of IBS in there somewhere.
Yeah, so they can have those IBS symptoms. Mm. And they often, with IBS, it can be kind of, it can come and go. So it's not like you have IBS, you're always going to have bloating. It can peak at times when stress is really high or after antibiotics or after food poisoning if you've eaten something kind of worrying. So, but it's also very normal to have a bit of gas. Like, it's really, really normal to fart. So, you know, and to be a bit bloated after a big meal. Those are normal things. So, yes, everyone's going to have those kind of symptoms. But it's, for me, it's when is it affecting your quality of life? Mm. When have you had these symptoms for couple of weeks to a month to 3 months, that's where we start to go, okay, this isn't really normal, and it's worth kind of investigating.
I've also heard, just on the topic of farting, to start today's show off, I've heard that apparently the more active you are, the more you gas you might pass as well, because it is an exclusive for you. When I was in drama school, I used to find that I always had gas. So I went to, so my mum made me go to the pharmacy and get these tablets called Windies.
Mm-hmm.
Windies!
God, I took a lot of Windies.
Okay, but anyway, moving on. So how bad are ultra processed foods for you? Should they be completely eradicated from people's diets?
Yeah. So this has been trending at the moment, right? Ultra-processed foods are the new thing that everyone's talking about. They've been around for ages, though. The thing is, there's quite a big difference, and this I would love people to really get this, in that there are processed foods, and those are foods that are processed so that we can eat them.
You like know, bagels.
Like, yeah, kind of bagels. It depends on the bagel. But as an example, peanut butter. Right. Peanut butter can be really, really healthy, but it is a processed food because you've got to process it to make it into a peanut butter. Then there's ultra processed foods, and those are foods that have ingredients that you wouldn't typically find in your kitchen, that have long lists of ingredients. I don't mean like a curry, which has 20 different spices. You know, things often you don't really recognize, can't pronounce, and that's the difference. The processed foods can be wonderfully, amazingly delicious and good for us. Ultra-processed foods, not all the same to be demonized, but we know that diets high in those food groups can be, are linked to more chronic health conditions. And it's suggested 50% of the diet of the UK population is made up of these ultra-processed foods. So that's where we're trying to really work on it from a kind of public health campaign, is to educate around how to spot those and maybe how to make replacements.
So just off the top of your head, what would you say are the most common ultra-processed foods?
Yeah, so bread's a big one that people don't really realise. So bagels was a great option, right? So bagels, I've only ever made bagels once, so I don't really know exactly what goes into it. But, you know, bread, yeast, water, maybe a bit of sugar, salt. That's a processed food. It's not an ultra-processed food. But as soon as you start adding in preservatives, thickeners, you know, colorings, flavorings, artificial flavorings, things like that, it becomes an ultra-processed food. So bread, a lot of the traditional supermarket breads can have a lot of these preservatives and emulsifiers and things, which makes it from a great health food to maybe not such a great thing to be consuming because it's an ultra-processed food. Yogurts, another big one. Yogurt is so incredibly good for us, especially for our digestive system. Plain yogurt, processed food. Yogurts with artificial sweeteners in and colorings, ultra processed food. So yogurt, bread, things like even soups, marinades, even things like baked beans if they add artificial sweeteners in. Yeah. So, but the good news is that there are always swaps that are easy and not as expensive. It's definitely more expensive to go for the less processed or less ultra processed ones. But it doesn't mean things are off the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing I would say, like, you know, for example, bread and beans, they are things that are universally accessible to everybody, right? Yeah. So, but as you said, there are better options. But anyway, so are there any common foods that you would avoid to improve gut health?
Yeah, ultra-processed foods, definitely. Yeah. I'd say, you know, within ultra-processed foods, and, you know, a lot of people listening won't like me saying this, but artificial sweeteners. I know that artificial sweeteners have a place because I know they can help you reduce your sugar intake and things like that. But we do know that adding artificial sweeteners makes them an ultra-processed food, and they have been shown in studies to affect the balance of bacteria in your gut. Having a Diet Coke once a week isn't going to make a huge difference. It's when you're consuming them regularly. And, you know, lots of my clients come to me and they're adding in three artificial sweeteners into every coffee and then having, you know, 3-4 coffees a day, wondering why they got, you know, problems going on with their gut. So big kind of big use of artificial sweeteners. Sugar alcohols is also a big one. I see this with a lot of my clients who eat a lot of protein bars and things like that. You can add sugar alcohols to keep the sugar down. But they can actually have a laxative-like effect if you eat a lot of them. So it's not to say they're bad for your gut, but if you're eating a lot of
excessive
sugar,
amounts,
yeah, and you're getting a bit of loose bowels, you
know,
maybe have a look at you know what you're eating. And alcohol's a big one too. Again, you know, I absolutely drink. I definitely don't demonize drinking at all. But we know that lots of alcohol can disrupt the gut, so we want to be mindful with it. Definitely.
Okay. So moving on then to the good stuff. What's the biggest myth around superfoods?
So I think the idea that you would eat a food and that it would fix X problem is really appealing. But it's just like with pills, like taking a pill to fix X problem. It's not really getting to the root cause of an issue. But also the premise that this superfood's going to fix you doesn't really work like that. So often with superfoods, what happens is that a study comes out that it takes an antioxidant in a food and kind of isolates it and looks at it and uses it in different kind of study variations. And it might correlate with an increased benefit. However, eating that food with that antioxidant in doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to have the same benefit as how they've taken it and given you a really high dose. So it's often poor quality kind of science around them. And then that comes with a really high price tag.
Yeah.
And
it's a marketing tool, right?
100%.
That's what I find with superfoods. I read them and I'm like, this is just a green juice. It's just a mix of all these different green things, which is great. But there's nothing about each of these individual properties that's a superfood or going to change your life, you know?
100%.
Like kale, for example. Mm-hmm. Great, it's a great leaf, but it's not like going to change your life over a piece of spinach.
No, 100%. Spinach and rocket and Swiss chard and all those are still wonderful. Doesn't mean you have to only buy kale and wear sweatshirts that say, like, you know, kale is you know,
kale,
holy or
Pilates,
whatever.
Pilates and chai lattes only. Thank you. So question about green juices then. They are all over social media at the moment. Do they have any benefits?
So it's a bit of a spectrum. Green, pure green, so no added fruit in. What they give you is a concentrated hit of nutrients because we know dark leafy greens and green vegetables are really rich in vitamins and minerals. So it can be a good way to pack in that kind of health benefit, that boost of nutrients. However, does that mean that you should replace your meals or eating your greens with green juices? Not necessarily. And they're really expensive to buy good quality ones. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice added plus if you make them yourself or, you know, can afford to buy them. Great. But actually eating kale or spinach, rocket, whatever by itself is much cheaper and comes with other benefits because when you juice things, you remove the fiber. And fiber is fantastic for your digestive health, keeps you full, supports weight management. In addition, with green juices, if they're adding in lots of fruit, you do need to be mindful. That's not to demonize them because fruit's still good for you. But if it's very, very fruity, it can have a bit of an impact on your blood sugar and your energy levels.
Yeah, because of fructose in it.
Exactly.
One thing that I do like is the AG1 sachets because if I'm all over the place, just so busy all the time, I find that it does help me to get in the veggies and stuff that, or the greens that I might not have because I'm eating, like, you know, meal prep every day or, you know, not getting in the good stuff.
Yeah.
Can I ask you the last question, the biggest question of the day? What is the biggest piece of nutritional advice that you would disagree with?
Oh, disagree with?
Disagree.
Okay, let's have a
spanner in the works.
Yeah. Let's have a think. I think that one size fits all. You know, you see everything like, oh, I take this, so therefore it definitely means it's going to work for you, or this advice works across the board. And we're all unique individuals, just like our fingerprints, just like our eyes. We're all individual. And so, yes, there's general advice that works, but it doesn't mean, you know, you've got to take information with a pinch of salt. And like you said, your nan will say a lot of fibs out there. You know, there's definitely a lot of misinformation out there. But you've got to take it all with a pinch of salt and listen to your body and kind of and test yourself and play with it a little bit. Nutrition isn't black and white.
Yeah, it's a trial and error a lot of the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I've learned so much in the short amount of time. Make sure that you go and follow Clarissa on Instagram because she's got a lot of debunking myths on there too that you'll learn a lot from. So thank you for coming on, babes. Have an amazing rest of your day.
Thanks.
Wonderful start to the show, as always. So we're going to move on now to, it's meant to be my favourite exercise of the week, but guys, I'm going to go in with my nemesis. The Ski Erg. Right, I'm doing a couple of fitness competitions this month. I'm doing the F45 games on Saturday, and then I'm doing the turf games in a few weeks. And I think both of them have got ski ergs in, and I don't do ski ergs in my daily routine. So what is a ski erg? It's basically hell on earth. You stand there, and you've got these two little handles, and it's all about the core and, unfortunately, the triceps. So you bend your knees, pull, use your core and drag your arms down as if you've been skiing, you know, it's like you were doing a big push off a mountain. And you know what? Like my brother said this morning, he was like, oh, they're, excuse my language, but piss easy. And I'm like, yeah, for you. I think they're all right for guys out there who've got big triceps and that train arms all the time. But for me, that's like, doesn't, you know, I tend to miss arms out on the often. I'm dreading it. So I'm going to let you know that I'm going to be doing skiergs.com this week and next week in preparation for all of these competitions. Please join me and let me know what you think of them too. See you after the break.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more from Gabby. This is What The Health.
FUBAR Radio presents
What The Health with Gabby Allen.
Joining me now is Millie Gooch, author and founder of Sober Girl Sobriety Society. I need to know what is so bad about dating sober.
I think it's just terrifying when it's something that you're not used to, because when I was drinking and dating, you know, like you use it to calm your nerves, you use it for confidence, you rely on it. And I think that's the one thing I realised when I stopped drinking is how much I really relied on alcohol. I was always kind of saying, you know, like, oh, I'm not dependent on it, but for my confidence I was really. But I also think there's so many benefits to it, like I used to go on so many dates when I was drinking, I'd be like, they are the one, and then I'd meet them a few weeks later sober and I'd be like, we've got nothing in common, what was going through my mind? I'd be like, oh, it was because I was drunk.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Harpreet, how are you, my love?
I'm great, thank you. How are you? It looks fun in there.
I want to talk about this because obviously you met your partner on The Apprentice. When did you start to get that feeling, I'm into him and this is more than just a banter or a friendship? Because it's a close environment being on a show like that, isn't it?
I really wish I could sit here and give loads of juicy gossip. Actually, we used to secretly meet in the laundry room on the show, but we didn't. And when I actually last spoke with yourselves, I think it was right after I'd won, we weren't even flirting, never mind dating. First time that I thought I actually fancied him was when I watched him on TV and I watched episode one. Hang on. You know, he's actually really good looking.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
And joining me in the studio, we have Deputy Leader of the Green Party, Zach Polanski. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping, Zach?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So you're hoping for four MPs in the general. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, that's absolutely the minimum at what
we're. I don't want to be Piers Morgan here, but will you take out, I don't have £1,000, will you take a £100 bet with me that you'll get four MPs?
Well, I do everything in politics to talk about the harms of gambling. So for me to place a bet on there would be pretty, you know, pretty horrendous.
Before we had you on, we discussed with the producers as to whether I should do the bet joke. And I said I would because I had every faith that you would answer it in the way I expect a politician of any moral standing.
We should also talk about cryptocurrency, which also is very problematic.
Rishi, if you're listening, mate, that's how you answer a betting question.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to What The Health. So this week I'm joined by Sam McCarthy, fitness content creator. Can you hear me, Sam?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, he can hear me. We had a problem just before we came on. I was thinking, shit, he's not going to be able to hear us, but he's here. Right, first of all, let's get to know each other. Well, I'm going to get to know you. I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions. Three words to describe yourself, please.
I would say bubbly, funny. I'd say pretty confident.
Love that. upper or lower body day?
No, we don't do no lower body days around here.
Oh, no. He's a Dorito on a fork, guys. No, terrible. Okay. Workout in the morning or evening?
Evening.
Oh, really? I'm a morning gal. Mm. What's your go-to cheat meal?
Oh, I've got a major sweet tooth. So it's going to sound like a proper rogue one, yeah? But I'd have to say, do you know, like a Toby Carvery chocolate cake?
Oh. No, I thought you were going to say just a Toby Carvery. Toby Carvery chocolate cake?
No. It has to be the Toby Carvery... Toby Carvery chocolate cake with ice cream.
Okay, I'll get one of those next time. And then I've got one last question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Flights or feelings?
Flights or feelings?
Yeah, because you say...
I'm guessing feelings.
Okay. Oh, that's cute. Because you've done a couple of those posts saying catch flights, not feelings, you know, them ones.
Oh, yeah.
God, making me look silly. So, let's talk about... why you started working out and posting on social media. What was the catalyst for it all?
Right. So it's a bit of a long one. So I hopefully we've got some time. But essentially, like, I feel like it all started because of lockdown. Like, I feel like lockdown was like, obviously terrible in some ways, but obviously it had its perks. Like, you had a lot of time on your hands. Like, there was nothing else to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So... one day, like, I always thought it was weird to post on, like, TikTok, social media in general. Like, I just thought, like, nah, you're a weirdo if you do that. Do you know what I mean? But one day, I just kind of swallowed my pride and I thought, all right, let's give it a go. Mm. So I started posting, like, fitness, like, lifestyle content sort of thing, more down the fitness route at the time. And then, like, nothing major kicked off. And then I'd say, like... it was probably towards the end of the second lockdown, my dad passed away, which flipped my life upside down. Like, didn't stop posting, obviously, stopped going gym for like the longest time I've ever, like, I've been going gym for ages, but probably stopped for like 2 months, which for me is a very long time.
Yeah.
And like after that, like kind of like 2 month period, I kind of like just thought to myself, like, what am I doing? Do you know what I mean? Like, I've got to kind of carry on doing what I'm doing. And I'd kind of say that was like the major catalyst. As shit as it, well, I don't know if you can swear, so sorry.
Yeah, you can say
as
shit.
As bad as it sounds, you can or can't.
You can say shit. That is absolutely shit.
Yeah, that was shit. So yeah, as shit as it sounds, like, that was kind of like the catalyst. It was kind of like an emotional factor. And like where I haven't gone gym, I wasn't eating right. I kind of lost like a lot of muscle.
It just made you feel so, like, more shit.
Yeah, exactly. Like everything was gone. So I just kind of, you know, start from the ground up.
Yeah.
And then kind of from that point, like, I got a coach, like a fitness coach, really kind of dug deep with it and just went on like a bulk. If you don't know what like a bulk is, it's like you eat a ton of food essentially to kind of, you know, gain as fast as possible.
Yeah.
But one of the negatives of what I done kind of like a dirty bulk. So I ate just way too much and put on a lot of fat.
Yeah.
And so right now I weigh like 75 kilos, but like at the peak I was 100 kilos.
Jesus, you must have been
like 25 kilo heavier.
Wow, pretty, I can't even imagine that.
Heavy.
But you know what?
No, I was like a balloon. Like, if you look at the Instagram and stuff.
Yeah, I have. I was looking this morning, having a little, like, you know, pre to see what we was battling with. So what I love about what you do post is the body positivity stuff, you know, how you have changed your life around from going from one thing to another. So would you say that your confidence and working out has affected your relationship with your body? And have you ever felt pressure to look a certain way since you've been posting on Instagram or TikTok?
Yeah, so I've always been like a pretty confident person. Like, I've never kind of like lacked confidence. I'd say like when I did start social media, obviously there's going to be a pressure to like look better, which I don't think is a bad thing at all. You always want to have a goal in mind. So for me, I wouldn't say social media pushed me to kind of, you know, be out of my depth, look a certain way. I feel like I wanted that anyway. It kind of gave me a bit more motivation because it's all online anyway, to kind of pursue what I really wanted to pursue.
So you say that you don't think having inspo off social media is a bad thing. Do you think it's helpful then, or do you think it's hindering people? Because I think from my point of view, it depends like what kind of content you're looking at. Obviously, I'm sure your Explore page is probably filled with different kind of workouts, the same as mine is. And that inspires me because I follow people that I would, you know, either want to train to be as strong as them or to, you know, have a certain physique aesthetic kind of vibe. But yeah. There's certain things, like when I look at posts and I'm like, that is just not, for some, like the normal person or the average person, it's just not going to be achievable, you know. So do you think, like, there's definitely pros and cons, right?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like comparison is like the thief of joy at the end of the day. Like, if you're going to sit there mindlessly scrolling, looking at all these amazing bodies, amazing physiques, amazing lifestyles, like, naturally you're going to feel like a sense of, like, I want that, like jealousy in a way, do you know what I mean? But you've kind of got to, like, rewire the way you think and think, all right, like, that's a goal. That's like obviously he's achieved a lot. I'm never going to look like him because everyone's got different genetics. But if I can look, you know, my best self by pursuing what he's done, like the kind of same lifestyle, the same routine, then I feel like that's what you got to take from it. It just depends about how you kind of look at it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I think that's probably the kind of approach that you take with your socials then, I assume. You want to inspire people and motivate people to be the best versions of themselves. So you're also an online coach. What are the main issues you come across with your clients?
So I'd say, like, where I did have the weight loss transformation, I'd say, like, my main client base is, like, weight loss, like, in terms of they want to go from being maybe overweight or just having an unhealthy lifestyle, you know, not moving, whatever, and kind of want to build those healthy habits. Like, I'm not the coach that's going to, you know, get you ready, all oiled up, ready to go on stage sort of thing. I'm more like a lifestyle sort of coach, like, building those healthy habits, becoming, like, making it more enjoyable. Like, fitness is for everyone, whether you're like a 40-50-year-old mom or a 15-year-old kid. Like, you can go to the gym, you can start working out. It don't really matter, like, where your starting point is, sort of thing.
Yeah. And speaking of, like, starting points, I actually got done by my old gym because I posted a video and in the background somebody was walking past and someone had complained, and it weren't even them. They just complained saying, I go to this gym and, you know, if I was filmed in the background of this, and you know what, fair enough, I obviously took the video down, but I think, like, as a content creator, how do you feel about this? Like, how do you feel about being restricted in several gyms banning tripods nowadays?
I get it. I fully get it. Like, if you're a gym that doesn't want tripods, doesn't want filming, then clearly state it, like, from the get-go.
Yeah.
Like, I've had so many experiences. I've been kicked out of maybe, like, 3 separate gyms now on different occasions.
Oh, for God's
sake.
Like,
it is mental.
Yeah.
I always make sure, like, whenever I get a gym membership, naturally, like, I'm going to be filming. That's my content. Mm. So I always make sure, like, hi, I want to sign up, whatever. Can I film? Sound. But I feel like a lot of gyms kind of leave it a grey area. Yeah, you can film, but you can't get no one in the background. And you're like, well, it's kind of tough.
It's impossible, you know, unless you use that cinematic feature.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had like mad experiences. Like, I'm not going to name the gym or the person, but like one time I was filming at a gym and I go up to someone. I'm like, yo, like, I'm filming. Do you mind if you come spot me on bench press? Like you're going to be on film and that. Like, is that okay? He goes, yeah, like, you're a massive inspiration. You helped me get into the gym. Like, and I was like, oh, sick. Like, I've picked out a decent person here. Like, he wanted to start social media. So anyway, I've done the video, edited the video that day. I didn't obviously message him saying, yo, I'm going to post it, because I just thought that was the given. Posted it that day. It blew up. It got like 4 or 5 million views across like Instagram, TikTok and stuff. A day went past and I get a message from this guy saying, oh my God, you didn't ask for my permission to post this. I've been getting so much hate. Like, I can't believe it. So I just messaged him back, like, oh, if you've been getting hate, do you want me to take it down? He goes, no, it's okay. Like, keep it up. You should have just let me know. So I'm like,
he wanted you to,
like,
tag him in it. That would have made his social media presence.
I didn't tag him anyway. So left it up, whatever. And then it got to a stage where obviously I posted it on TikTok at that point, but then I repurposed my content and posted it on Instagram. Mm. So I just, you know, I thought nothing of it. Maybe it's my common sense being an issue here, but I posted it on Instagram because it done well. I thought it's going to do well on both. It did do well. It got a couple million views. Again, the same guy comes to me and said, bro, I had a mad issue with you posting it. I just messaged back saying, no stress, I'll delete it, whatever. Anyway, deleted it, video's gone, go to my gym the next day, I'm banned from the gym. The guy's got a massive issue with me, won't go into that too much, but yeah, it just really gets blown out of proportion.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, there's definitely he probably just wanted to be tagged in it so he could actually be known. But I think if anyone wants to do any filming, go to King's Gym. I go to King's Gym, Mitchum, and it's so sick. Everyone's got the tripods out. Nobody actually cares. Yeah. It's like proper bodybuilder's gym. So it makes you feel like you want to be as big and as good as them. In future, ask permission. Everyone. Okay, so question. Have you ever considered taking steroids? Have you ever felt pressured for it?
Yeah, every day of my life. Like, I feel like a lot less recently. I'd say back in the day when I first started socials, like, you get to meet people, both natural, both not, and you're like, you know what? Like, I could so easily jump on stuff and become massive, you know, get all the social media following. But what I've come to realize as of now is it doesn't matter if you have an amazing body. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, jacked, ripped out your mind. What matters at the end of the day and what people are going to resonate with is your personality. So that's like, there's been a lot of hate on like TikTok at the minute, especially with like my group, James, me, McKenna, Will, and my little brother, Jack. Like, everyone's making videos like, oh, how are these guys sponsored, whatever, like all they do is just like speak and like, you know, go go-karting, for instance. Like, they're not gym goers. But like, what people get so, you know, hung up on is the fact that you don't need to look like an absolute roided massive geezer to do well on social media and inspire others to want to live your lifestyle. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like now,
I feel like being the not being, was it roid head, like, makes you more like relatable, as in, like, you know,
100%.
I mean, you guys, all of you guys look great, but like, you know, there's people that can see you and go, you know what, I've seen his transformation, I could one day maybe look like him, you know, if I work as hard as this guy, but I also still want to have fun with my mates, I still want to go go-kart, and I still want to do all these, you know, go on holiday and not have to be in the gym five times a day. And I just think, like, the thing is with steroids, you know, fine if people are doing them for a certain aesthetic or for a competition or whatever, but I just think in the long run, like, they are detrimental to your health. In, you know, you have to use them long term to stay as big as you are, otherwise you literally deflate like a little balloon. And I just think it's more, for me, I've never done them, so I don't know, but I feel like it's more rewarding to actually reach a physique, you know, accomplishment, because I've worked for it, not just because I've stuck something in my arm and then, you know, it's given me like basically a boost. But speaking of which, what are your thoughts on SARMs then? Because SARMs, for anyone that doesn't know, it stands for Selective Androgen Receptor Modulators, and they are body enhancing drugs that mimic the effects of anabolic steroids, which increase muscle mass and strength. So basically, it's without the needle, right? It's a tablet form. What do you think of those?
So before I get onto that, the first point where you said like about like, you know, you have to work, you like work for it way harder rather than sticking the needle in. Like, so people just don't think it's like a magic potion that you're going to get massive. Like, everyone reacts to it different. You could take as much gear or as steroids as the other guy and you're still not going to look a certain way because you don't have the genetics for it. So I feel like, one, you have to work way harder if you take steroids because you can't have a cheat day. You can't go on holiday as much with your mates. You can't have that night out because you're taking certain substances.
Sod that.
So, yeah, so if anything, it's way harder to take steroids and look big than it is to not. So, yeah.
So why would anyone want to do that? Don't do it, guys.
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah, I get it. But then back onto the SARMs thing, like, I feel like that was almost like a trend, like the past 5 years, to think, oh yeah, I'm gonna just take a few tablets and, you know, become massive. But in reality, they're actually so much more dangerous than steroids for two reasons. One, like, you know, you're taking it orally, so it's gonna mess up, you know, your kidney, your livers, because you have to, you know, process that in your body compared to injection, which is straight in your bloodstream. Two, obviously they haven't been researched. The long-term effects, obviously short-term it shows little to no side effects, you're going to be fine, no health detriments whatever, but in the long term, you know, there's been people going blind, losing the function of certain limbs. So I feel like if you're going to take SARMs, then you're just a donut, to be honest.
How do they even make these available to people? That's crazy, because I suppose steroids has been around for such a long time that they've been able to monitor how they affect, you know, people over a long period of time. But SARMs, are they a newer thing to steroids?
Yeah, they're a lot more recent.
Okay, so What is your one piece of fitness advice for anybody wanting to start their fitness journey? Don't do a dirty book.
I would say just don't take it that seriously, if I'm completely honest. Like, obviously take the diet seriously, take the gym seriously, but just try not to take yourself too seriously. I feel like people put so much pressure on, you know, I have to go gym 6 times a week. I have to eat perfect every single day. When in reality, like, I do this for my job. So I'm going to do that. I'm not doing anything else. I'm going to eat perfect every day. Obviously, yeah. I have my cheat meals, my cheat days, whatever. And I'm going to go gym every day because I really enjoy it. But if you're getting into it and you want to start it, then, you know, go one day. Don't follow no regimented plan. Just experiment and, like, kind of enjoy the process.
Yeah, see what you enjoy. I love that. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Sam. It's been very educational talking to you.
No worries at all.
Good luck with everything. And don't be filming in the gyms without anybody's permission, please. Thank you. You'll be back on the next room. Nice to meet you. Take care.
Nice to meet you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay, so coming up after this next break, we are joined by Susanna Daniels, CEO of Melanoma Focus. I cannot wait for this chat. I'll see you then.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Hey!
FUBAR Radio presents.
All areas.
Mark from Married at First Sight UK.
See, at the wedding, you told Sean you were 26, but you're actually 36.
Oh, yeah.
So drop in that decade. We ain't gone 1 or 2 years either side. What was going through your head when you thought, I'm going to shave off 10 years.
A 26. Third of your life.
Yeah.
It was instant reaction. As soon as anyone says to me, how old are you? I'm like 26. I just stopped counting after 26. Would I have told him? Probably not.
No. Yeah. Ever?
Well, maybe when we're 80 years old and we've got the grandkids running round.
Except, like, you wouldn't be 80 years old. You'd be 98.
I'd be 26 still. I'd be going around the corner for some more injections.
Politics Uncensored.
Joining me now, the former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, MP. And there you are, stood with hundreds of thousands of people at Glastonbury singing, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." What is that like?
It was quite extraordinary. It was an amazing experience, and I was very pleased we did it. The office got very excited about Glastonbury. Every single person in the office thought it was necessary for them to be at Glastonbury.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah.
Every single one said it was really necessary for them to come.
The Dating Show.
I'm friends with a fair few exes, and I think you can be friends with an ex, but I genuinely do. But I do think that it's timing is everything with that.
I think it depends what you cast as a friend.
Yeah,
someone you're going to hang out with on your sofa? Like, if you've already shagged, you know, isn't that a bit weird?
I think that's a different level of friend. I think that's a different level of friend. You can be friends with someone, you can't be, like, best fucking friends with someone. I mean, I've got exes that I talk to about their current partners and whatever else, and they'll tell me about that sort of stuff. But I wouldn't say, oh, do you want to come over for fucking Chinese and chill on the sofa?
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hello, guys. Welcome back. We are now joined by Susanna Daniels, who is the CEO of Melanoma Focus. Are you there, my love? Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly fine. How are you today? Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. I would love to know more about your expertise about sunbeds. So, I mean, I've grown up, I have to put it out there, my mum has had multiple skin cancers removed because she used to, so she's a 60s baby. So there was a time in her life where she had one of those sunbeds over her bed and she used to just go sleep in it. And when she was, like, on holiday, she would have a newspaper with some tinfoil across and like that. Like, she told me all these stories and she's had multiple, so she doesn't go in the sunbeds anymore or anything like that. And she's had multiple skin cancers removed. So I know how bad they are for you. But I'm actually baffled to read all of these articles and all these statistics of people that will still go on them, even though they know how bad they are for you. What do you think?
You're absolutely right. And just so people understand, so sunbeds emit high intensity UV radiation, and that can damage the DNA in skin cells. And this sort of buildup of damage and can cause genetic changes and mutations in the skin. And that's particularly important in young skin. And this unrepaired damage and mutations can build up over time. And this can result in a rise of melanomas and other skin cancers. And this sort of tan that people get from sunbeds and also from lying in the sun is a negative reaction to the sun through the exposed skin.
So, you know when you lie and sunbathe, is it a different, it's basically a different tan then to what you would get on a sunbed?
It's more intense on a sunbed. And also when you're lying in the sun, you're probably wearing sun protection as well, where you're probably not going to be wearing anything when you're on a sunbed. So you're not giving your skin any protection at all.
Have you seen on TikTok, people are like doing, there's a hashtag sunbed addiction. And people are like showing people how to get more tanned on the sunbeds. Like there's like a sea salt spray. There's like all these crazy things that people are doing. And I'm like, I thought sunbeds would be banned by this point in my life.
It's absolutely staggering. Yes, we are aware of the huge addiction. And we're committed as a charity to doing more research into this area. It's staggering that the sort of what's been seen on TikToks, the sounds, and
especially because TikTok is like such a Gen Z generational thing, so it's probably, well, hopefully not, but it might be encouraging those younger people to go on the sunbeds because they just think it's cool and they're seeing other people do it. So that being said, I know that you said using the sunbeds before the age of 35. I think you either said that or it says that here in my notes. Basically, if you use a sunbed before the age of 35, it increases your risk of skin cancer by almost 60%.
That's right. And we also undertook some data this year and we showed that 28% of people are using sunbeds in the UK. But actually with the younger population, so with the 18 to 25 year olds, this rises to 43%. And it's not knowing the sort of risks of sunbeds. So we also asked whether people understood the risks. And in the younger age group, so in the 18 to 25 age group, 52%, so about half of people knew that sunbeds increase your risk of skin cancer. And really worryingly, about a quarter of people in this age group using sunbeds actually thought that sunbeds decrease their risk of skin cancer.
So, I have to admit, right, that I thought that if you are not in the sun a lot, so, you know, if you live in this bloody country and then you're going on holiday, would it not prep your skin to go on a sunbed before you go away?
So that's a myth.
That's what we do here on What the Health.
that will protect your skin from skin cancer, because absolutely not, it doesn't. Any exposure to sunbeds will increase your risk. And the stat that you said earlier, that does, you know, that is absolutely the case, that your first exposure to indoor tanning before the age of 35 will increase your, it's associated with a 75% increase in risk in developing skin cancer.
So why do you think women then, I know a lot of men that go on them as well, but why do you think so many women are willing to take to using sunbeds despite knowing the risks?
I think it is both women and men who are using sunbeds. You'd be quite surprised that it's about the same. And in fact, it could be men than women are using sunbeds. But I think it's the misunderstanding, as we've said, that they don't understand the risks. And also, because it's sort of repetitive damage, so it can take about 8 to 10 years to get a melanoma, and it might take longer than that. So it's living for now. You know, people sort of want that instant tan, that instant look that is seen and represented. But you can get that from a fake tan. You know, it doesn't have to be from a sunbed or from lying in the sun.
That's true.
Really protecting your skin will protect yourself and also, you know, you won't be aging as much. You know, have that sort of.
Yeah, that's true. I think though. Question. So it's talking about repetitive. The repetitive use is that. Are you saying that you would have to use them quite a considerable amount of times in order to then have the long term like negative benefits, or can just like one use affect you?
Even one use increases your risk, but clearly the repetitive use will increase your risk more. And our data showed that about 50% of people were using sunbeds at least once a week. So that's, you know, we're talking about people, a lot of people are using sunbeds very, very regularly.
So can I ask you, I have been told that, listen, I've been around sunbeds, as you can hear, from ever since I was younger. I do remember when I was younger that sunbeds were a lot more, I think they must have been in the news or something then, about saying the damages of them. But I have to admit, over the last few years, I haven't really heard much about sunbeds and stuff being, you know, the most like damaging thing out there at the moment. I mean, it's probably because there's so many things that are out there that are, like, vaping, you know, smoking, all sorts of things. But do you, I've lost my train of thought here. I was going to say, oh yeah, do you think that from back in the day when it was more prominent that they were bad for you, maybe because there was a spike in melanomas or more people getting skin cancer from what I'm aware to now, is there been a change in that for, like, you know, for what is put there in the news for things? Because I know it says here that the government is set to announce plans to phase out smoking due to the harms. Should sunbeds be treated in the same way? Because I feel like it's not as out there in the media as it used to be.
I think you're right. And I think the fact that they're on every high street normalises them. And there is definitely a link between the number of sunbeds in various cities to deprivation. Which, you know, so that's, you know, that's a worrying fact. CR UK put some data out yesterday. So Cancer Research UK showing we're actually at an all-time high this year in melanoma skin cancer cases, and that rates have increased by about a third over a decade. So it's not that skin cancer cases, melanoma cases have reduced. They're actually on the rise, massively on the rise. But actually, you know, what you say about people not seeing you're not seeing any sort of advertising of the damage. You know, you see on cigarette packages, you know, what smoking can do to your lungs. And there's nothing similar, you know, in sunbed salons.
Exactly,
sort of advocating that they're really healthy almost, whereas they really aren't. And they're banned in, you know, they're banned in Australia and Brazil. And we do feel as a charity there needs to be educational campaigns so that all sunbed advertising should be banned, certainly, and that people really understand the issues of sunbed.
That's actually a very fair point, because I remember when the cigarette packets got the, you know, those horrible photos on them. That was like, you know, it's happened in my time. So I wonder if that will be the next step then with sunbed talents. Like sunbed salons, when you walk in, are there going to be, you know, images of the effects that's going to have on you? Like, do you think that would be the next step into, like, kind of weaning them out?
I think it's certainly an important step forward, so that people understand the risk. You know, as I've mentioned, that, you know, 52% of young people don't realize the risk of sunbeds.
Yeah.
And so if people don't realize, you know, I think that's a really, really important first step.
I know what I was going to say before. I was going to say, does sun, either from the sun or sunbeds, can it help your skin now? You know, so things like eczema, psoriasis, acne, because that is one thing that I also learned in my younger days. That is something that stuck with me because I used to get eczema quite badly. I do remember, I think probably my mom, she's probably not the most resourceful person to ask, but would health professionals recommend to go on a sunbed? Because I'm sure they used to back in the day to help things like that.
No, they wouldn't recommend going on a sunbed. And certainly there are certain types of UV light that might be helpful for people with psoriasis, but it doesn't tend to be I think sunbeds tend to be UVA, whereas this tends to be UVB from sunbeds. So they have specific, if you suffer from psoriasis, then they have
specific lighting.
Light therapy that they will use within medical institutions. So it's not really, they wouldn't recommend anyone to go on a sunbed.
Okay. I think that's actually, you know, you get those LED light masks things now, don't you, to help you with collagen and fine lines and things like that. So it's probably going down that route rather than going on a sunbed, guys. I would probably recommend that. So can I ask you then, we are coming into, hopefully, some sunnier months here in the UK. Also interesting that Brazil and Australia have banned sunbeds, but I'm like, they're hot countries, so they probably, they won't have as much, won't cause as many tears by banning them. Whereas I think here, people go on it for just some bloody sunlight and some vitamin D, which is not the excuse. But if we did have more sunlight, and hopefully we do, what can you recommend people to do to keeping your skin safe?
So we would recommend wearing sun protection factor 30 and above when the UV index is above moderate. So that's above 3. And you can see that on any weather apps or anything.
Yeah.
You know, it'll have the UV index so that you know whether the UV index is high. But it's not just about sunscreens. It's also about covering up. So covering your skin in between sort of 11 and 3 o'clock. And seeking shade. So it's a combination of all of those factors that are really, really important. But it's wearing sun protection factor 30 plus. And when you're getting your sunscreen, you should be looking for the SPF, but also the star rating, which is at the back of the sunscreen, there'll be a little circle with, and you're looking for 4 or 5 stars. So that shows your protection against UVA, whereas the sun protection factor is against UVB. So you want a broad spectrum sunscreen.
Okay, amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Susanna. It's been very educational for me, definitely, as a sun worshipper. I will try to be better myself. But thank you so much, and I hope you have an amazing day. And hopefully the sun does come out soon, just for our, you know, to brighten our endorphins and that. Lovely to meet you, my love.
Pleasure.
Take care.
And you, and make sure you reapply your sunscreen as well.
I will
do. That's always important.
I did put it on this morning, actually, to be fair. Thank you so much, my love. Have a great day.
You too.
Take care. Bye. Bye. Mental, isn't it, how, you know, as a person that does it for aesthetic reasons and nothing else, let's be honest, I just feel like I look better with the tan. But it's only as I'm getting older that I'm starting to think, maybe I should start looking after my skin a little bit better. Like when I was in Mykonos last week, I did wear Factor 50 on my face every day. And if you can see any clips of this, if it's shown this, I actually still do have a tan, because it's not, apparently SPF isn't, it's not like, it's 50 times less likely to let the rays through, but you still get tans through it. Something like that. It's not about, like, if you wear it, then you're not going to. Like, it still gets through. Listen, I'm not the person to talk about UV rays. Go and talk to Susanna. But basically, get your SPF on. Let's talk about something that I actually do know, hey? So, fitness questions. We have Sophie, who asks, I'm a female who wants to start bulking in order to lift heavier. However, I'm worried about what this will do to my physique. Any advice, and would you recommend bulking? So, first of all, I want to break this down a little bit. Bulking is accomplished by lifting heavier weights for a lower amount of repetitions per set. An overload must be achieved to bulk up. This means working the muscles more than they are accustomed to, increasing the workload as a person gets stronger. Bulking is also eating in for a considerable amount of time, a surplus in calories, so like over 500 plus calories more than your maintenance, to gain muscle mass and unavoidably fat. As Sam just said, he went into a bit of a dirty bulk, which means that he was just eating anything and everything in order to put on weight, where there are other ways of doing it, where you can do a lean bulk, which is a surplus, but you're still eating clean. However, you are still going to put on the fat. But then people then go into a cut, so that strips the fat that they've gained alongside the muscle, and it exposes their new, more sculpted physique. However, lifting heavier, Sophie, is not just down to eating more. Of course, you are fueling your body more, so you will have more fuel to get through. However, lifting heavier also comes with progressive overload. So even if you upped your calories this week, right, it doesn't mean that you're going to go into the gym next week and be able to lift a substantial amount more than you were doing the week before. It all comes down to patience, consistency, and progressive overload. So what is progressive overload, you may ask? Progressive overload is where you, over amount of time, you increase the weight or the workload or the reps or the time under tension. We've definitely spoken about it on this show before. But for example, if you were going to do a bench press for 100 kg, let's say that, if you're frigging hench, for 8 reps, then you might increase the reps. You might increase the weight the week after to 110 for 8 reps. Or alternatively, stick with 100 kg and go for 10 reps. So over time, you increase something, and that is progressively overloading. That isn't going to be down to how much you're eating necessarily. I would recommend you say that you're worried about your physique changing. So therefore, I assume you don't want to bulk up or get like necessarily too much bigger. You just want your, the overall motive is to get stronger. So I would suggest going into a slight surplus, maybe 200 calories to start off with on your maintenance, and then work on a consistent 4 to 6 month program of 8 weeks, like 8 weeks at a time, changing up as you go, of progressive overload. And I can categorically tell you that you will get stronger without getting massive, like fat. So hopefully that helps. There's two ways to do it. Either you make peace with getting bigger at the same time as getting stronger and then have to strip it all back, or if you want to kind of do both at the same time, just go into a slight surplus and work with progressive overload. Moving on to Jasper, who is actually bored of weightlifting. He wants to do something else. He wants to do some more movement, more functional movement in his workouts. He said, do you have any tips of incorporating more functional movement, as he wants to get some, he wants to get moving a little bit more. He's a little bit stagnant with his weightlifting. So Jasper, I would suggest, why don't you go to some sort of class? Like, I don't know whether your gym does any classes like that, like, you know, like a Hyrox class or just like a circuits class, something that will challenge your body to do something in different ways. You know, like you probably do like big movements, like compound movements, like the squat and the deadlifts and things that are fundamentals and staples in your program in order to get stronger and build muscle mass, etc. But you know, if you've been training for a long time, I get it, sometimes it gets a bit boring. So if you go to like a circuits kind of class, then you can incorporate things like a thruster or a goblet squat, or you know, alternating lunges or farmer carries or overhead carries, like things that you might not off the top of your head think to do, but it just challenges your body in other ways. And I think then having taken a bit more of a hybrid approach like that, maybe incorporating a bit of running in there too, might also just make, like, reignite that fire to get back into your weightlifting. And if you do, like, maybe drop two of your weightlifting sessions a week for something a bit different, it might then give you that bit of a rocket up your ass to get back in there. And you might be surprised. You might be able to lift more or see a bit of a change in your athletic performance endurance-wise because you have been challenging your body in another way. So hopefully that helps. Oh, you know what? Do a Gabby Allen shape-up session. Go on my Instagram page and find one of my classes, and I can categorically tell you, you'll be challenged by some functional movements on there. So Karim asks, should I get a personal trainer? I want to get healthier, but I'm conscious of how expensive they can be. You know what? Fair enough. Personal trainers can be expensive, but they can also not be expensive. So once again, Shape Up with Gabby Allen. I do online one-to-one courses with people. Personally, I work with you to reach your goals, and it's all done through, I write your program, I give you your meal plan, it's all done online. But obviously that means you have to have a certain level of self-accountability and determination and motivation to be able to go into the gym and do it yourself. Personal trainers in the, and also that is like a lot more cost efficient than getting a personal trainer in the gym, because obviously it's online. However, we've had some amazing results. Watch this space, because they are coming in hot. Some girls have been with me for 4 months now, and the changes that we've seen in them has just been insane. But if you feel like you do need that certain level of accountability, a face-to-face person, you can get a personal trainer. I would suggest set yourself a goal, right? Give yourself a little bit of time, maybe 3-4 months, have a personal trainer face-to-face, you know, commit to that, make that commitment with financials as well to, you know, that's what you need to do in order to learn something from them, in order to get some sort of momentum going. And then after that, move on to something online or make your own program. And if you think that you can stick to it, then, you know, you've saved yourself a lot of money, but you've learned the fundamentals from someone that actually knows what they're doing. So hopefully that helps. I've absolutely loved today's show, guys. I've loved being back. This chair was made for me. I hope you've enjoyed today's show. Make sure if you have any questions, send them over to @WhatTheHealthShow on Instagram. And make sure you join us next week for another round of amazing guests. I will see you then. But I will see you then. Bye, my friends.